Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chozayin Mod Aleph. We're just finishing off the last line in the Mishnah that we saw yesterday, and that is for the Kohanim veLeviim Maktishim Leolam veGoalim Leolam Ben Lifnei Yovel Ben Achar Yovel. So now the Gemara is going to explain to us what that means. Kohanim veLeviim Maktishim Leolam. It's on the two dots on the top of Chozayin Mod Aleph. Bishlama Goalim. I understand what it means that they're allowed to be Goel Leolam because it's Trichlafu Kemid Yisrael. That comes to exclude what happens to Israel. Delo parke, that they're not allowed to be poreg elad yovel until you reach the yovel. Kamash balan, the kohanim v'levim goalim leolam. They have a right to be goel leolam. For instance, when a person is magdish et stei achuza, if the person redeems it before the yovel, then that sadeh will return to be their stei achuza. On the other hand, if the gizbar sells that stei achuza to another party, and then the balim goel it makes no difference. It'll go out in the Ovel, and it'll be mitchalek le kohanim. That is not true of the property of a kohen and a levi. The property of a kohen and a levi, even if a third party comes in and is goel the property, nevertheless, in the Ovel, it will not be mitchalek le kohanim, it will turn to hekdesh, and then the kohen and levi will have forever in order to redeem their property. Now, it turns out to be that it's a machloket the Rambam and the other Rishonim with regards to what is exactly the status of Israel. The way we have described it until now is al pi rova rishonim, which is that when it comes to a stei achuza, when a person is makdish the stei achuza, as soon as a third party comes in and buys it from the gizbar, the original owner is out, and then when the yovel comes, it will be mitchalek the kohanim. On the other hand, the Rambam believes that as long as the balim get a hold of the property during that first yovel, even if a third party's come in and been goelit, if the balim, the original owners then are goelit from them and bring it back into their possession, they're able to return it as a stei achuza. Now that is nishma from the Gemara that we had yesterday. Gemara yesterday seemed to say, well, if he redeems it during the first yovel, it's his. And also from here in the Gemara, it says, well, Yisrael, until the yovel, has the right to redeem it. After that, he doesn't have a right. But it sounds like until the yovel, no matter what has happened or transpired, he is able to redeem it. And that's the Rambam's opinion. The Rambam's opinion is, as long as the balim get it back into their possession, before the yovel, it will remain theirs, even if it's been sold to a third party in the interim. On the other hand, all the other Rishonim believe that if a third party redeems the property, and that's what it says in Torah Kohanim, once the third party redeems the property, the balim are out, and then when the yovel comes, it's minchalek the Kohanim. So the difference between Israel and Kohanim and Leviim is exactly this point, about how the yovel impacts the stei achuza. When it comes to a Israel, the yovel comes, if it was sold to a third party, now it will be minchalek the Kohanim. On the other hand, for a Kohen and Levi's property, if you reach the Yovel and someone else has redeemed in the interim, it'll return to Hekdesh, and then the Kohen and Levi will have a right to redeem it forever. And that's what it means, Goalim Leolam. But how do we explain El Makdishim Mai Yerya Kohanim V'Levi? What do you mean Makdishim Leolam? Afilu Yisrael Nami? Just like a Kohen Levi can always be Makdish, so too can Yisrael. What's the distinction between Kohen Levi from Yisrael? V'chitayim V'mishnat Yovel Atzma, that we're going to distinguish, or the distinction between them will be the Yovel itself. So that works well. Anichal Shmuel, demar shnat yovel etzma lo kitcha. That if Yisrael is makdish his stei achuza during the shnat yovel, it doesn't work. So that works well according to Shmuel. Yisrael cannot do it during the shnat yovel. Kohen and Levi makdishim leolam. They do have the ability to be makdish it during that year. Kamash malon. Now we'll say the kohanim veLeviim makdishim leolam. From that we'll learn that kohanim and Levi'im are able to be makdish leolam. El Rav, Rabu says you could even be makdish estei achuza during the yovel. What's so unique about a Kohen and Levi? Even Israel can be Makdish during the Yovel. Israel can be Makdish during the Yovel. And a Kohen and Levi can be Makdish during the Yovel. What have you gained in terms of being a Kohen and Levi? What does it mean, Makdishim Leolam? Ulatameich. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Even according to Shmuel, part of this is difficult because the Mishnah that we just brought that says that the Kohenim are Makdishim Leolam, Begol Leolam, Ben Lifne Yovel, Ben Achar Yovel. What's the meaning of ben lifnei yovel, ben achar yovel? Lomali, what do I need that for? Meaning that ben lifnei yovel, ben achar yovel has no impact. Doesn't have an impact on Yisrael. Doesn't have an impact on a kohen. Meaning that Yisrael is allowed to be goel before the yovel and after the yovel. He's allowed to be makdish before the yovel and after the yovel. And kohen and levi are the same. Even our mishnah in the beginning of the parak, which suggested that Yisrael can't do it, shtei shanim lifnei yovel, that was only good advice. It wasn't that they weren't allowed to do it. Just if they do it, they're going to have to redeem it at full value. And the same thing, achar yovel. Immediately after the yovel, you have to redeem it at full value. But in either case, the Israel has the ability to be makdish and to be goel during those periods of time. So why are you distinguishing the kohanim and leviim with regards to lifnei yovel and achar yovel? Ella, what are you going to say? I did the Tana Reisha Lifnei Yovel Uli Achara Yovel. Since the beginning of the Perek, which was speaking about Israel, used the terminology Lifnei Yovel and Achara Yovel. Tana Seifa Nami Ben Achara Yovel Ben Lifnei Yovel. To keep parallel structure in the Mishnah of what is true by Israel, not true by Kohen and Levi, they threw in Lifnei Yovel, Achara Yovel, based on the structure of the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek. So Rav will say the same thing here with regards to the issue of Makdishim the Olam. Vayedi Tana Reisha Ein Makdishim. So just like the beginning of the Masechta started out, Ein Makdishin Velo Goalim, Tanai Misefa, Makdishim Goalim, by the Kohen and Levi, it just used the reverse Lashon to indicate a contrast between Kohen Levi and the Israel. But truthfully, there's only really one contrast here, and that's Goalim the Olam. By the Israel, the Yovel impacts. By the Kohenim and Levim, the Yovel does not impact. And that's the only real distinction between them. The rest of Lashon, which is Makdishim the Olam and Ein Makdishim, really have no impact, because the Ein Makdishim, the first Mishnah, was only good advice. Therefore, the Makdishim of this Mishnah is also not something that's a real distinction between a Kohen Levi and the Yisrael. And the same thing with Lifnei Yovel and Achar Yovel. Truthfully, in the beginning, the Lifnei Yovel and Achar Yovel is all part of that good advice. It's not really Alocha by Yisrael. So to over here, by Lifnei Yovel and Achar Yovel, the Kohen, it's not really impactful in terms of a distinction between Kohen Levi and Yisrael. The only distinction that's really impactful is Golim the Olam. The rest is dragged along, because we just want to keep a parallel structure in the Mishnah. With that, we finished the Perek, and now we'll begin the new Perek. Hamakdish et Sadeu b'shah she'en yovel. So before we discuss the Mishnah of a person who is Makdish Sadeu when there is a Yovel, well, when there is a Yovel, then we're talking about a Steach Huzah that gets redeemed at the fixed price that the Torah assigns of 50 shekel over the 49-year period. Over here, we're talking about b'shah she'en yovel, when there is no Yovel. So what's the difference? Ben Yovel, then you have to be podeit bishovyo. Then you redeem it at its full value. What does that mean in contradistinction to when there is a yovel? So Rashi and Tosfot discuss that over here, and we're going to see in a second why is it that it's important that when there is no yovel that our Mishnah is true, but when there is a yovel, it isn't true. Omer lo, the gizbar says to the owner of the field, patach ata rishon, you make the first bid on the field. Shabalim notnim chomesh, v'chol adam eit notnim chomesh. Because the owners of the field, when they redeem a field from Hekdesh, the Torah says in the Pasuk that b'chamishito yusif alav, he has to add on an additional fifth. We know that's a chomesh v'labar, which means 25% in excess of whatever he bids. Therefore, we want to know what the original owner's bid is, because he's going to really make a bid, and then have to add on 25% to that bid. And then we allow other parties to come in and bid. The Gemara will explain, or the upcoming Mishnah will explain how exactly that works, and what the tension is between the original owners and the other bidders. But that's a distinction that will be made here. Rashi says, the Bizman Shinoheg ain't litzarich l'sholo. What's the difference between why there is no Yovel here in this Mishnah, and what would be the difference if there was a Yovel? So Rashi says the distinction is that we don't need the Balim to bid first. Over here, where we're selling the property back to him at its true value, we need a bid, because we have to determine its true value. When it comes to when the Yovel's Noheg and he redeems the Steach Huzah at a fixed price, we don't need the bid from the owner. We know what the price is. You look it up. We know the schedule in the Torah. How many years are left to the Yovel? Shekel pundion l'shana. We know exactly how much it is. So therefore, we don't need the Balim to bid first. So that's what Rashi says, the distinction between this Mishnah where there's no Yovel, and if there was a Yovel, is this distinction of whether we need the Balim to bid first. Over here, we need the Balim to bid first. Over there, we don't need the Balim to bid first because we know what the monies are. On the other hand, Tosafot discusses the Chomesh, the additional fifth that is added on. Now, it's true that the Chomesh is added on both whether it's a Steach Huzah that is being redeemed for the fixed price, or whether it's a Steach Huzah that's not at the time of the Yovel when it's being redeemed at its true value, you still add on a Chomesh. But the Chomesh makes a difference over here. We're going to see that in the upcoming Mishnah, because the Chomesh will actually impact on us looking at the Balim versus other bidders. In the case where it's a fixed price, both of them have to redeem at the same price. We'll give precedence to the Balim because they pay a fifth over that price. But there's no difference of whether the Balim bid first or don't bid first, because the Chomesh is predetermined based on the fixed price that you're going to redeem it from. Over here, the Chomesh is determined on the first bid of the Balim, and that impacts, as we'll see in the upcoming Mishnah. So that distinction, according to Rashi, it's simply that we don't need the Balim to bid first. That's what it says. It has the impact in terms of the Chomesh. The Chomesh is impactful over here. The Chomesh by the fixed price is not impactful, because we know what that number is automatically, and always the Balim will exceed the bids of others because they are giving a fixed price, and the Balim just add a Chomesh on top of it. So, Ma'ase be'achad shikdish sadeu b'pnei ra'ata. Person was makdish sadeh because it was so worthless. The field was so bad and so worthless that he was makdish it. Amrulo, tach atarisho? Go ahead, you make the first bit of it. Amar arehi shali bisar. Says I'm gonna bid an isar on it. So Amar Rabbi Yossi argues, lo amar ze bisar ele be beitza. He didn't say an isar, but rather with a beitza. Shehekdesh nifte bekesef ubeshava kesef. Hekdesh can be redeemed not only with money, but equivalent currency. Anything that is valuable. So he didn't bid an isar, but he rather bid an egg for it. So Amrulo, they said to him, higaticha. They said, you got it. It's yours. Nimsa mafsid isar v'sadehu lefanav. So he lost his isar and he got his field back. So in the end, he ended up at the same field and he just lost money because he was makdish the field. Now it's obvious here that it says mafsid isar, that's referencing the Chachamim's position, which the Gemara will discuss. The fact that the Mishnah now reverts back to the Chachamim's position. Now Tosafot asks about Rabbi Yossi being found in a Mishnah. How is it possible that Rabbi Yossi was actually discussing this issue of a makdish steachuzah? And he says, Teima ech haya ze maase bimei Rabbi Yossi. Alo Rabbi Yossi lo haya bizman habayit. Yossi is not around when the Beit HaMikdash was extant. And if he wasn't around when the Beit HaMikdash is extant, then how was there a steachuzah that he was being makdish? So he says, Veish lamar de palig al pi ha-kabbalah. He's arguing based on the Mesorah that he hit. Al pi ha-pi sheira bizman habayit. It happened before his time. But he's arguing about something that he had a Mesorah about what the exact story was. Inami, the other possibility Tosfot says, is that this Mishnah may be applicable even after the Zman Abayit. That even after the Zman Abayit, we will give precedence to the Balim, the owners, for redeeming the field. Now even though when the Bayit is not a standing or extant, we do not redeem the field for any significant money. Just say, give a pruta, and then throw that pruta away, and that'll redeem the property. Because over there, the money is holech liibut. It's not going to anywhere. It's not going to benefit anybody, because Hekdesh is not going to get the money. So if a person is makdish a field in a situation where Hekdesh gets no value from it, we say, follow the rule of Shmuel, that a filo by a pruta, you can be podeh kodshim. And since that's the case, we just redeem it on the small amount of money, and then we throw the money away, and that's it. Tosafot's first answer says, well, if Rabbi Yossi lives at a time when there's no Beit HaMikdash, what's the issue here being discussed about the Balim being first and redeeming the property? Doesn't matter who gives the money, we just don't want it to remain as Hekdesh because it's a takala. On the other hand, the second answer of Tosafot says, maybe even in that situation we give precedence to the Balim, and that's based on the Pasuk, which we're going to see in the Gemara in a second, that there is, based on the Psukim, a reason to give precedence to the Balim based on Gzerat HaKatuv. Gzerat HaKatuv, that the Balim get precedence, period. Even in a time where Hekdesh gets no benefit from the fact that the Balim will be the first bidders. So those are the two answers of Tosafot. Either the Balim being relevant and being first is only true when the Steachuzah is done during the time that the Beit HaMikdash is extant, and Rav Yossi is arguing Al Pi HaKabbalah, or the other possibility is that the Balim being first is relevant even after the Churban HaVayit, even though Hekdesh will get no benefit from the Balim being first. So now the Gemara begins. Amakdish Sadeo B'Shah She'ena Yovel Noeg. Omrim? What do you mean you tell him to open up with the first bid? Vatanya, we have a bright kufin that we force him to open up with the first bid. So the Gemara says, my omrim, nami kufin. When we say that we speak to him, it doesn't mean literally speak to him. We speak to him with the whip. When we speak to him with the whip, then it's called kufin. Vibai dema. Others say that it's a process. Mi kara omrim. First we ask him nicely to bid. Itzai itzai. If he listens, then fine. Vilo, if he doesn't listen to that request, then kufin, then we force him to make the first bid. The Tosafot wants to know what's so unique in this circumstance that we force the Balim to make that first bid. That we try to get the most Hekdesh. Tosfot says, Yishlamar Hashani Hochad Yocholi Vyeli Dei Takala Im Yanu Olam Mimena. That we want to get this field redeemed as fast as possible. Since we want to get it redeemed as fast as possible so other people do not have problems with Mi'ilah inappropriately benefiting from Hekdesh. Therefore we force the Balim in order to make a bid, in order to have the process move along faster and to execute on redeeming this property. And that's why we're going to be Kofin. Now, Shabalim Notnim Chomesh. The Balim give an extra fifth, which we said again was 25% in excess. My area Shabalim Notnim Chomesh. What's the reason? Is that the only reason that we go to the Balim first? Because they give another 25%? Typically, the Aidi de Chavivele, Tafi Uforikla. Maybe you should say, or the reason should also be, that the Balim, since it's their personal field, they'll pay more for it. They have an emotional attachment to the field, and therefore they'll bid higher. Ve'od, mitzvah gula ba'adon. There's a mitzvah that the owner himself does the bidding. Now, this comes from Bechorot, that we say there is a mitzvah of the owner to redeem it over any other party. That we learn now from the pasuk by Behema Tmeya, person who's Magdish e Behema Tmeya, says there, v'im be'behema tmeya v'ada be'erkecha, v'yasaf chamishito alav, v'im lo yigael v'nimkar be'erkecha. So v'im lo yigael means if it was not redeemed, then, v'nimkar be'erkecha, it's sold. So the process here is first, im lo yigael, gael is by the owner. So first the owner is given the opportunity to be goelet, then only if he fails to be goelet do we nimkar be'akecha. So we see there's a mitzvah for the owner to be first. And that applies to all these things that are found in this parsha. The Gemara used it in Bechorot for exactly that, to discuss about Bechorot. And over here we're applying it to Steachuza as well. That there's a mitzvah b'di'adon. The owner of the property has precedence. And that's what we just discussed in the Tosafot, the possibility that precedence exists even when it's not to the benefit of Hekdesh. It might be independent of Hekdesh's benefit. Even though Hekdesh won't benefit from it, there might be just a gzerita katuv that the owner always goes first. So number one, we have another reason why the owner should go first, which is that they are more likely to bid higher because it's their personal property. Number two is the pasuk tells us that the owner should go first. And then now you're giving a reason in the Mishnah because they add on a chomesh. Where it says, chado v'od kamar. The Mishnah is adding on an additional reading. Chado. Number one, the balim should be the first bidders. Da'idi chaviv alei tafi ufarikla. First of all, since they are emotionally attached to the field, they'll pay more for it. They'll overestimate the value of the field. Number one. Number two is mitzvah gula v'adoni. Number two is that there's a mitzvah to give precedence to the owner to redeem it. And then, number three is, and that's what our Mishnah mentions, after those two, even on top of those two, shabalim notnim chomesh. In excess of that, that Hekdesh benefits from the fact that the balim are the ones that are redeeming it here because they pay an additional 25%. Let us say that this is the argument between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama. Rabbi Yossi savar shavek kevsef kekesef. Rabbi Yossi holds that cash equivalents, meaning items that can be monetized, are equivalent to money. You can only use money. You can't use money equivalents. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that the story is about a beitza. He gave an egg for it. So that was fine. Chachamim say he gave an isar, which is currency, because that's the only thing you can use. It says, we have a limud in the Gemara in Baba Kama that says, yashiv darabot zubim, that when it comes to payment of nizakim, a person can pay shava kesef ki kesef. And that's a principle that exists throughout the Torah. Something that can be monetized is money equivalent, and it's the equivalent of giving currency. And therefore, even the Chachamim subscribe to that. So how could you see over here, all of a sudden they're arguing? The Gemara says, all right, the kuli alma shava kesef ki kesef. You're right. Everybody holds it that. V'hocha, b'podim b'davar shem b'chumsho shave pruta kemiflege. Their machloket is about what is the minimum threshold to be poder from Hekdesh. Here the balim are poder from Hekdesh. They have to add on an additional fifth, an additional 25% on it. Now, does that 25% have to be significant? The Chachamim believe yes. That 25%, that excess, has to be worth at least a pruta. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, no, it doesn't. So therefore, the Chachamim say, Tanakama savar isar de'ika b'chom sho shave pruta. And isar, which is actually equivalent to 8 prutot, and isar is equivalent to 8 prutot, then if you take 1/5 milabar, meaning 25% of that, you'll have 2 prutot. Therefore, the chomesh is worth a pruta. So that's why you can use an isar to redeem it. Parkinon, therefore you are. Rabbi Yossi, kabeitza, nami parkinon. Because it says, even a kabeitza, you can use to redeem it, even though its chomesh will come out less. Tosafot suggests over here that a beitza is about equal to a sheve pruta. It's equal to a pruta, so obviously 25% of that is less than a pruta. So even though really the Tanakhama is giving an example where it's two times of a pruta, it's two brutot that you would give at 25%, but that's the coin that you can give that will still have 25% of its value be above a pruta, and that's why they said in Isar. Rabbi Yossi says, doesn't matter. As long as the redemption price is a pruta, we don't care what the chomesh is. As ever, you can use a beitza, which is worth a pruta. That's fine. Shava kesef kekesef. You use the pruta, you're fine. The 25% you have to add on, even though that's less than a pruta, we don't worry about that. And that's the nukadata machloka between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama. Samarlo yigaticha nimza mafsidi sarvis adeo lefanav. That's the last line in the Mishnah. As I mentioned in that, stama kidrabonon. That stam at the end of the Mishnah is obviously like the Rabbonon, who said that he redeemed it with the Nisar, and therefore the story continues with that being the Isar and not the Kabeitza of Rabbi Yossi. Amar Echad, Harei Yishili Be'Esur Slayim. Person says that I am willing to redeem the property for 10. V'chad Omer Be'Esrim. The next bidder comes and says, I'll pay 20. V'chad Omer Be'Shloshim. The next bidder says 30. V'chad Omer Be'Arba'im. Then you have a 40. V'chad Omer Be'Chamishim. And the last bidder says 50. So now they sold it to him for 50. He won the bidding. He won the auction. Now they're going to take it at 50. Chazar bo shel chamishim, if the one who bid 50 now backs out, he says, I'm not going to buy. Mimashkani minachasav eser. We take 10 shekel out of his property because we still have the bidder for 40. So the bidder for 40 will go back to him. We'll get him to pay the 40 because he's committed at least to 40. And the only difference between the 40 and the 50 is the 10. So we take a mashkon for that extra 10. Chazar bo shel arbaim, if the bidder of 40 also backs out, mimashkani minachasav eser, then we take 10 out of his property, because we still have the bidder for 30. So the bidder for 30, we'll get him. Then we'll take another 10 from the bidder for 40, and then another 10 from the bidder from 50. Chazar Boshal Shlishim, if the bidder at 30 also now backs out, then we take from him a mashkon for Eser, because we still have the bidder at 20. Chazar Boshal Esrim, if the bidder for 20 now backs out, we take from him 10, because we still have the bidder at 10. Chazar Boshal Eser, if the original bidder, who was the bidder at 10, now backs out, Mochri Mota B'Shuvyo, we go and sell the property for whatever we can get it for. And whatever the difference between the 10 and what we received for the property, he'll have to make up to get to the 10. All right, so that's one piece of the Mishnah. The next piece of the Mishnah continues what we saw from the prior Mishnah, which is that the Balim pay an extra chomesh. Now, over here, the Mishnah is going to describe to us why it's important that the Balim bid first. Because when the Balim bid first, it sets the threshold by which the other bidders are going to be held. And that's why it's important that the Balim go first, because of this issue of the Chomesh. And now the Mishnah is going to explain. Balim come and they bid 20. Anybody else says 20, a Balim kodmim. The Balim go first, Menesha and Mosifim Chomesh. They add on 25% to that. There'll be an additional 5 shekel. So the Balim, when they bid 20, Chektesh is really ending up with 25. So if they bid 20 and other bidders bid 20, they get the first right of refusal. They basically get the bid because they're going to, in the end, pay more. So, Amar Echad, Harei Hishali, Be'esrim, Ve'achat. When Balim bid 20, another party comes in and bids 21. Really, truthfully, the field should belong to the one who bid 21. The problem is that the Balim who bid 20 are not really going to pay 20. They're actually going to pay 25. Because they're going to pay their 20 plus the additional Chomesh. So that will be 25. But their Karen, their actual bid is 20. And this other person's bid is exceeding them. So what do we do in this case? Habalim notim esrim v'sheish. The Balim have to pay 26. We force the Balim to bid in the extra shekel that this person is bidding. This person says 21, the Balim say 20. If we give it to the other party who's bidding over here, Hektesh loses. They'll get 21 instead of 25. On the other hand, we can't give it to the Balim for 25 because they only bid 20 of Karen. So what we're going to do is say you have to match the bid of the other party, 21. We're going to force you to match his bid of 21. And then the 5, the chomesh that you said before, you'll add that on. The 5 shekel you add on and you'll give 26. We don't make him pay an additional chomesh on the excess bid here because he didn't bid that amount. That's being forced on him by the other parties. Then, Besrim Mushtaim. Another bidder comes and says 22. After the Balim had said 20. Habalim notim Besrim Besheva. The owners have to pay 27 in this case. Again, the original 20 that they were going to pay, the chomesh on that is 5 shekel. Now we're going to force him to move up his bid to match the bid of the other party. Because if we just give it to the other party, we're going to lose. Because the other party is saying 22. The Balim is saying 20 are going to pay us 25. So Hektesh doesn't want to lose. They say, Balim, you win. But you have to match the bid of the other party. That's 22. So we'll make him match the bid. We won't charge him an extra chomesh on the additional amount he bids. But we'll have the original chomesh of 5 shekel. That's 22 plus 5 is 27. Besrim v'shalosh. Have a bidder come in at 23. Habalim nodim esrim v'shmona, then the owners have to pay 28. Again, the same process. The original 20 they bid, plus the 3 of excess that's coming from this party, and then the chomesh, the 5 shekel that they bid originally, so that'll come out to 28. Besrim v'arba, if an outside party bids 24, habalim nodim esrim v'tesha, we're going to force the Balim to pay 29. Again, they'll pay the base 20 that they bid, the additional 4 shekel added by the higher bid, and their original chomesh, which is 5 shekel, that'll be 29. Besrim v'chamesh, if the other bidder comes in at 25, habalim notim shloshim, the Balim pay 30. Now at this point, it's questionable, and we'll have to see in the Gemara why this is true. Because at this point, the other party is bidding 25, and the Balim are bidding 20 plus the 5 chomesh is 25. Hektesh at this point will be equal no matter which bid they take. They take the Balim's bid at 20, they'll get 25. They take the outside bidder's bid at 25, they'll get 25. So at this point, why don't we just say, give it to the other party? He's bidding a higher base rate, but he's equaling, Hektesh is not going to lose out over here. So why over here, when he bids 25, do we force the Balim to pay 30? So that's a question in the Gemara about how it is that we say the Balim must pay up 30 over here. Now, the Mishnah explains why in all these cases, we only added on the excess bid and not an additional chomesh. Ein mosifim chomesh al liyuav shel zeh. We're not going to force him to pay an extra 25% on the higher bids of the outside parties. Now, Amar Echad Harei Sheli Besrim V'Sheish. Someone comes in and bids 26. Im Ratzu Abalim Litein Shloshim V'Echad V'Dinar Abalim Kodmim. If the Balim are willing to bid 31 plus a dinar, they go first. Im Lav, if not, Omar Lo Higaticha. We say to the other party who bid 26 that you got it. Again, the Gemara will have to explain this. At 26, they bid 20 originally. They have 5 of Chomesh. This person's up at 26. If the Baalim want to match this person's bid, all they would have to do is add on an additional 6 shekel to their 25, and they get 31. So if they are willing to do that and pay 31, why don't we say it goes to the Baalim at 31? Why do you need a 31 plus a dinar over here in order for the Baalim to win? The Baalim should get precedence as long as they're equal to the other party. That's what you just said in the previous statement in the Mishnah. And therefore, the Gemara will have to ask what this extra dinar is doing over here. All right, so Amar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda is now going back to address the first part of this Mishnah, and that is when we have bidders who start to back out. So Amar Rav Chisda, lo shanu, that this is true when the bidders back out, that we only take 10 from them as collateral. If the 40 bidder is still there, when the 50 bidder pulls out, and the 40 bidder is still there, then he's only caused a loss to Hekdesh of Esser, and that's why we only take Esser from him. If the 40 bidder drops out also, we force both the 50 and the 40 to take on the loss, which is, say the 30 bidder is in place still. We go out and we sell it for 30. Hekdesh now lost 20 shekel. 20 shekel because the 40 bidder bid 10 higher, and the 50 bidder bid even 20 higher than the 30. Now how do we divide up the loss? The loss is 20 shekel over here. In terms of contribution to the loss, for the 40 to 50 range, the 50 bidder was the only one who caused that loss. The 40 bidder only bid up to 40. So from 40 to 50, it's clear that the person who bid 50 has to pay for that 10. But from 30 to 40, both bidders bid 40. I mean, the person who bid 40 bid 40. The person who bid 50 bid 40 plus. So they both bid 40. So that loss between 30 and 40 is really caused by both the 40 bidder and the 50 bidder. And so that's what Rav Chisda says, that they'll have to split that loss. That means that the 50 bidder will actually have to pay 10 for the difference between 40 and 50, plus 5, half of the loss of between 40 and 30. And the person who bid 40 will also pay for half the loss between 40 and 30. He'll pay 5. So he'll pay 5, and the one who was up at 50 will pay 15. So Gemara says, Tanan, our mission doesn't sound like that. That when the 40 backs out, he only gets charged 10. Amai, litain bar chamshin ba'adei. Why doesn't the 50 bidder also have to pay with the 40 bidder? That's what Rav Chisda said. There was no 50 bidder. The Mishnah's not made a case when the 40 was the top bid. Then the next case, Chazabo ben Shloshim, Meshkani Minichasav. We take out of his property Esser. Amai, Plitain de ben Arbeim Ba'adei. Then the 40 bidder should also have to pay alongside with him. And truthfully, the 50 bidder also should have to pay alongside of him. That case is taken when the 30 bidder is the top bidder. Chazar bo ben Esrim, if the 20 bidder backs out, we take 10 out of his property as a mashkon to pay for the difference between the 10 and the 20. Again, why isn't the 30 bidder, or the 40 bidder, or the 50 bidder, why aren't they all have to participate in the loss? They all bid in excess of his 20, and therefore they should have to share in the loss. So Mar again says, ben shloshim. There's nobody above. 20 was the highest bid in that case. So Mar says, what are you going to do with the last case? The 10 bidder backs out. We sell the field for whatever we can get. And then we take out of the 10 bidder the residual. What's the difference between the 10 he bid and the other amount? Why doesn't the Ben Esrim have to pay along with him? He should have to share in that loss. What are you going to say in this case? The same way we answered in all the other cases. There is no 20 bidder. 10 was the top bid. Then why did the Mishnah write that we go and take the money from the one who bid 10? Nifremi menu mi baile. There's only one bidder here. So you just say Nifremi menu, we go and collect from him. Why are you specifying it's from the 10 bidder? Well, if you're saying it's from the 10 bidder, it indicates that there were other bidders. And if that's the case, then we're talking about a case when the 20 was there. And then why doesn't the 20 share in the loss that the 10 is also being asked to pay over here? So Alam Rav Chisda, it's a question in the Girsa whether it's Rav Chisda said this or not over here. But we'll read it with the Girsa in, and it seems like that way from the Gemara further on. Lokasha. There's a difference between what I'm speaking about and the case of the Mishnah. Kan bevatachat, kan bezecherzeh. It depends how the bidding falls apart. If the bidding falls apart altogether, they all back out of the bidding at once, then over there we're going to force them to share in the losses. We're going to force the 50 to share in the losses of the 40, and the 40 to share in the losses of the 30, and the 30 to share in the losses of the 20, because they all backed out at once. But if they back out sequentially, then when the 50 bidder backed out, the 40 bidder is still there. The 40 bidder is still there, then the only loss that he really caused was the 10. If later on the 40 bidder then backs out, that's his problem, that's his issue, and he's going to have to take care of the 10 himself. So that's the difference between the statement of Rav Chisda and our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a case where they are sequentially falling off. Rav Chisda is talking about a case where they are bevat achat, they disperse. And when they disperse bevat achat, all of them have to share in the backing out of the other parties. So Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi. We have a braita that supports this. Chazru Kulam Keachad. If they all back out together, Mishal Shimanam, they have to share in the loss. meaning that the parties who bid higher will share in the losses of the lower bidders because they're also contributors. Within 200 is 100. If you bid 40, you also bid 20. So if the 20 backs out, then you also have to share in that loss from the 20. That means top bidder will pay for his loss, and then the top bidder will share in the loss that's caused by each of the other parties that are below him, but less and less of a share of it because there'll be more parties sharing the loss. But he'll still have to pay in all of those cases, not just the 10 that he exceeded the 40 bid by. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, Meshkanim nechasav eser, that you only take out 10 from his property. So how do you reconcile between that Braita and our Mishnah? The Lav Shemayinah, Ked Rav Chista. It's like what Rav Chista said, that we make a distinction between Bepatachat and Zecher Zeh. Shema Mina. Ike derami lu mirma. Some ask it as a question. Tnan, chazar bo shel eser, mochrim mota bishuvya. Benifrim mishel eser, et amotar. Va'atanya mishel shim b'neim. Don't we have this Braita that says that they actually split in the losses? Am Rav Chista lo kasha, kan bevatachat, kan bezecher zeh. So there's between Bepatachat and Zecher Zeh. Over here you see that Rav Chista made that statement. That's why maybe the Gemara quoted in Rav Chista's name above. But that there is no question. When it's Bevatachat, when they all back out at once, then they have to share. The higher bidders share in the losses caused by the lower bidders. So then if they fall out sequentially, then the higher bidder only has to pay the excess that he bid above the bidder behind him. And then when that other bidder backs out, he'll have to take care of what he bid in excess of the bidders behind him. But there, they won't have to share in the other's losses because when they left, there was only a loss, was the difference between their bid and the bid below them. Sounds like from our mission over here that we count the chomesh towards the bidding over here. That the amount that he pays, if you bid 20 and an outsider bids 20, we give it to the balim because the chomesh is a part of the monies that we look at going to Hakdesh, and it's part of the bid. Firminu, balabayit omer b'sela, when it comes to me, pudeh, meiser sheni. If the balabayit says, I'm going to redeem it with the sela, v'chad omer b'sela v'isar, and someone else says, I'm going to bid a sela plus an isar, a little bit above that, shesela v'isar, call them. The person who redeems it as sela isar, he goes first. Because he raises the underlying bid. Even though by Maestro Sheni, the Balim pay a Chomesh. And a sela plus a Chomesh, 25% in excess of a sela is another dinar. If you're going to put another dinar on there that's in excess of a isar, nevertheless, we give precedence to the one who bid the highest bid without the Chomesh. So why are we distinguishing between the two? So when it says, the Chomesh Ravcho de Hektish, who? Chomesh Adif. Over here in our case, the additional fifth is going to go to Hektish. That's benefit of Hektish. Hektish is the beneficiary of the payment of the extra 25%. That way we'll count it towards the bid because Hektish is a beneficiary. By Meiser Sheni, the Chum Sharavcha the Balabait, the fact that the Balabait redeems it at a 25% more, where's that money going? It's going to him to buy food in Yerushalayim. In the end, it's his benefit. It's not the benefit of Hektish. It's the his personal benefit. So over there, Karna Tifrok Shapir Chum Shalo Yichpatlan. Then we're going to focus on the actual underlying bids. And therefore, whatever the highest bidder is, that's what we'll redeem it with. And we'll forget about the issue of the chomesh, because the chomesh is all going to accrue to the balabait anyway. So the additional chomesh is not relevant to us. We don't care about that chomesh. What we care about is the underlying bids that are given for these properties. And the highest bidder will be the one who redeems that property, who takes the hekdesh off the meiser peirot and goes on to his money. Tosfot brings an alternative of how to read this gemara about what the question was. The question wasn't what we had stated, that why does the Chomesh count and why does the Chomesh not count, but rather why in our Mishnah do we force the Balim to match the higher bid? And by Maaser Sheni, we don't force them up to match the higher bid. So over here he says, Shemu Makshek Kach, Maishna Shukofim Abalim Latei Damim, Shemar Acher. Why do we force him to match the bid? And he pays the fifth on his amount. By the bright, by Maaser Sheni, Shabalim Omrim Besela, V'Achad Omer Sela V'Isar, then shall we start kodem? We don't make him pay a selvisar plus the chomesh on top. The answer being the difference of who the benefit accrues to. Over here, we have a benefit to Hekdesh. We're going to force him to move the bid up because Hekdesh is the beneficiary. Over there, where he's his own beneficiary, even a higher price. All that happens is the kedusha transfers from the payroll onto the monies. And then he's going to move, take that money up to Yerushalayim. He's going to buy payroll with that money. So if there's more money, he just buys more payroll. He gets more. He's the beneficiary over there. We're not going to force him to pay up more on the Karen and raise the price, because again, Hekdesh has no benefit from that. All right. Amar achad arei sheli, besrim b'chamesh, nutim shloshim. Kalei mebalim, ata gavra b'charikin. Gavra b'charikin means you basically replaced me. You can stand in my shoes. So since you can stand in my shoes now, why do I have to pay at all? Let him pay the 25. Why do I have to pay 30? Hekdesh is no worse off if he pays 25 versus my bid of 20 plus the chomesh was 25. So when it says, damar balim dinar, that the Balaim didn't just bid 20, they bid 20 plus a dinar. So, velitnei dinar. Well, if he said 20 plus a dinar, why didn't they write that in the Mishnah? The Gemara says, lo dak. They weren't so exact. They just rounded it off. Velo. V'aktani im ratzu ha-balim liten 31 dinar. We saw that before. If they want to give 31 plus a dinar, balim kodmim, the balim get precedence. So we see that the Mishnah does talk about dinarim. Velo amar abba damar balim pruta. Velo dak. The balim originally bid 20 plus a pruta. So 20 plus a pruta, if you add 25% on top of that, that's 25 plus a pruta. So that 25 plus a pruta and a fifth, although the fifth's not going to matter because it's less than a pruta, but you'll have 25 plus a pruta. So if someone else bids 25, the balim are still in excess of them because it's 25 and a pruta. Why didn't the Mishnah write pruta? Because pruta is a really small coin. That's not significant to us. A dinar is 24 isarim. Each isar is equal to 8 prutot. That makes for 192 prutot to every dinar over here. So when you add it on a pruta, that's 1/192 of a dinar. So it's an insignificant amount, but it's significant enough that it keeps his bid above the other party. Because the other party bids 25, he's still willing to give 20 plus a pruta plus the fifth, which is another 5. So he's willing to give 25 and a pruta and a fifth. That's an excess of what the other party gives. And that's why over there we still say the balim have to do it. He doesn't pay an additional 25% on the excess bids of the others. That's only if we don't have three other bidders telling us that the price is higher. But if we have three other buyers bidding on this property and they all come in at a price higher than the Balim, we force the Balim to move their price up. So you can't bid below market for your property. If this is the market price, we have three people bidding and saying this is the market price, you're going to have to raise your bid to the market price. And when your bid's at the market price, you're going to add a fifth onto your market price bid. The only time we don't add on a fifth is when these people are bidding in excess of market. Or we don't have a lot of bidders here. There's only one other bidder here. So we don't know who's the right market price over here. Over there, we won't force the Balim to pay the extra 25% on the excess bid. But in a case where we have three other parties bidding higher than the Balim, we know that the market price is above there. And therefore, we're going to force the Balim to raise their Karen to the market price. Plus, they're going to have to pay the Chomesh. They're going to have to pay the 25% on that. Now, the Chiddush here is that normally when it comes to Hekdesh, we need 10 people to assess Hekdesh in order to get a value assessment. Over here, we're going to allow three people to give us the guidelines in terms of assessment. That's a chiddush here. Even though only three people bid, we're going to force the Balim to raise their bid and pay the 25% on that. Tanya Nami Ochi. Now, there's a question about whether the girsa over here should be Tanya Nami Ochi, because it's not clear how this braita is a support to what we just said in Rav Chisda. So Rashi's girsa is Tanya. We have a braita, and it's not a Tanya Nami Ochi. Tosafot does maintain the girsa of Tanya Nami Ochi, and we'll explain in a second why. Beit Shammai Omrim Mosifim. You add on 25%. Beit Hillel Amrim, ain mosifim. You don't add 25%. A fifth milabar, chechidami. What's the case? Ilo nishom, if it has not been established, the price has not been established yet, my time is Beit Shammai. Then why does Beit Shammai say that you have to add on 25% if we don't know this is the true value? Elo nishom, it must be that they knew what the value was. We had three other bidders come in at that price. We're going to force it up. And now, we're forcing the Balim to bid at that price, and we still say that you have to pay the 25%. So Mara says, if that's the case, Lema Rav Chisda Damar ki Beit Shammai. What are you going to say now? Rav Chisda is following the Shita of Beit Shammai. Because even now, when we set up the Braita to say that it was a case of Nishom, where they already had three people bidding at that price, and we forced the Balim up, only Beit Shammai says you add 25%, not Beit Hillel. And now you're going to say Rav Chisda is in the Shita of Beit Shammai. We don't want that, because we know the Loch is like Beit Hillel. So why would Rav Chisda be an Amora having a Memra, Aliba de Beit Shammai? Amora says, alright, Lo Olam de Lo Nishom. It's a case where it was not assessed. Ubeit Shammai Machmirim. And Beit Shammai is Machmir. Even in a case where we don't have a higher value assessment, nevertheless, when we force the Balim to raise their price, they have to add on 25%. That's the Chumra Beit Shammai. Ibai Dema, Lo Olam de Nishom. It's a case where it was assessed, and we do have three parties bidding at that price, and we're going to raise the market price. We're going to force the Balim up to the market price. Vipoch, and flip the opinions in the Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Mosif. That Beit Shammai says that you don't add on, and Beit Hillel says you do add on. And Rav Chisda will be in the Shita of Beit Hillel. That makes sense for us. It says, Litnei Gavi Kuli Beit Shammai V'chumei Beit Hillel. That's the case. Why isn't it found in a list of Mishnayot in Idiot, where we list out the six Mishnayot where Beit Hillel is more Machmir than Beit Shammai? Here's another case where Beit Hillel is Machmir. We have to go back. That's a case where there was no assessment here. Beit Shammai Machmirim. And Beit Shammai is Machmir. So again, what's the proof here to Rav Chisda? The Tanya Nami Ochi, if you say there's a breita that says this. Now it might be that the Tanya Nami Ochi, and this is the way Tosafot reads it, is that we find that there are Tanaim who say you add on 25% when you raise the price. So that's all we're searching from the breita, and that's what the breita supports. Whether it's Beit Hillel, whether it's Beit Shammai, whether it's in the exact case that Rav Chisda spoke about, nevertheless, we do find such a concept that there's a Tana who believes that you add on 25%. And that's what the Tanya Nami Hochi is. On the other hand, Rashi reads it not as Tanya Nami Hochi, but Tanya, we have a Braita. Braita deals something along our lines, seems to be dealing with our issue, and therefore we bring a Braita down. It's not a proof to Rav Chisda. It's rather we're just trying to understand Rav Chisda in the context of this Braita. And that's why we asked, is Rav Chisda holding like Beit Shammai? No, we don't want that. So either he has to hold like Beit Hillel, or we have to say the case in the Braita is not relevant to our case over here. It's a case where they didn't all bid into a market price. So that's the way Rashi reads it, just as an independent Braita asking a question on the position of Rav Chisda. Tosafot does say, Tanya Nami Ochi, that we find that there are Tanaim who say that you do add on 25% when he has to move his bid up. All right, now the last line in the Mishnah, when an outside party bids 26, if the Baalim want to exceed his bid, they have to pay 31 plus. So we said again there, why does he have to bid 31 plus? Why can't he just bid 31? He can bid the 20, original 20 that he had, plus the 5 is the Chomesh, that's 25, and he has on the 6 that this other party is bidding, he gets the 31, and he should go first. So Ratzu in, Lo Ratzu Lo. So first of all, it's optional. The Baalim have an option whether to move the bid up or not. So Amriyata Gavra Becharikin. At that point, the Baalim could say to them, listen, I bid 25 originally, this guy's at 26, he's stepping into my shoes, you're getting what you wanted, why do I have to bid at all? So then the Gemara says, Vadimar Mayavite, if he wants to match the bid, why does he have to go to 31 plus? If he just goes to 31, he'll be equaling the bid of the other party. And if he has 31, and doing as good as this other guy does, why don't you give it to me? So Amar Rav Sheshet Achi Gemar, Imratzu Baalim Mi'ikara, Litein Cheshbona Megil Echad V'Shloshim V'Dinar, if the Baalim want to ensure up front, they want to make a bid that ensures that nobody can exceed their bid. Hechidami, what's the bid that they should do up front? Damar Basrim Ve'achad. The Baalim should bid 21 up front. Habalim Kodmim. Then the Baalim are always in front. Imlav. Omer lo higaticha. If not, you guys can take it. If the Baalim bid 21 up front, then 1/5 of 21, meaning 25% of 21. 25% of 20 is 5. The one is a sella. A quarter of a sella is a dinar. So this person is bidding 21 plus the chomesh. The chomesh is equal to 5 and a dinar. So that means up front he's really bidding 26 and a dinar. So if another party comes in and bids 26, then he's still in excess of them because he has 26 and a dinar. Because if we force him to add on to the amount that he bid, because if they added on 5 to his bid, if they bid 26, we're going to make him pay 5 extra sell over here. We're going to make him add on to that amount. And that will equal 31 and a dinar, because he doesn't pay a chomesh on the additional amount that he bids. So he had 26 and a dinar, plus the extra 5 that we're forcing him to bid, that'll get up to 31 and a dinar. So if the Baalim up front wanted to get to a bid that was equal to 31 and a dinar, they should bid 21. So if they bid 21, then they won't be beat. The bidding will force the Baalim to add on, and the Baalim will keep adding on until they get to a price that exceeds them, 26 and a dinar. So as long as the other bidder gets up to 26, 31 and a dinar is still what the Baalim will pay. So in order for them to be, if get up to that number of 31 and a dinar, they should bid 21 up front. They bid 20 up one in front. The amount, maximum amount that the Baalim can be forced to bid based on other people's bids is 31 and a dinar. Beyond that, already you can say that we're on equal footing because then the other party is exceeding his bid with the chomesh, which is 26 and a dinar. So in order to know up front that you won't exceed 31 and a dinar, bid 21 up front. Bid 21 up front. You'll never pay them more than 31 and a dinar. And if someone reaches 26 and a dinar, they'll be in excess of you, and then you won't have to pay anymore. Okay, we'll stop over here.